thank you very much. Sorry to run in late. I was double booked, thanks to the infinite wisdom of the APHA. I'm on two sessions for the entire week, and they're both at the same time. So thank you for your understanding of my panic. I'm going to be presenting some of the work from my organization, Partners in Health, looking at Ebola and gender. This is not a scientific study, but really a biosocial analysis. And I couldn't agree and admire the work of the other presenters more. I think we have so much more to do to really understand the impact of this terrible disease on women. So I'm just going to share a few things from our work here, and I'm happy to say that there's at least one person who's worked with us in the front lines. Again, I'm going to be talking about the biosocial gender impact of Ebola. Initially, there were many more reported deaths among women. We're still sorting out the results. I don't know what the final analysis will be. But as we've heard, pregnancy is particularly deadly, and in previous epidemics has a reported mortality of over 90%. Nurses and medical assistants suffered a high death toll, which is, I'm sure, why Dr. Johnson was asking about nursing, and we can all imagine why that would be. At least 10% of the deaths in the epidemic were health workers, many of them women. But women also supported families, children during quarantine, during school closure, as well as taking on the burden of orphans. And that had a significant impact during the epidemic as well as after, and continues to go on. And then there are significant secondary health systems effects that disproportionately affect women that I'm going to discuss briefly. So first of all, Ebola is really a caregiver's disease. And we know in every society in the world, it's women that care for the sick. And so it was women who were bathing and nursing people before we knew that they were Ebola, even people who were refusing to leave home. This young woman took care of 10 family members who were put into quarantine in Kono District in Sierra Leone. She had some rudimentary protection, and the community health worker behind her, who you'll meet shortly, Santa, who works for Well Body Alliance and Partners in Health, would bring food and place it on a rock about 100 meters from their home, and she would walk to the rock and pick up the food and supplies, gloves, etc. But she cared for and nursed 10 people, and all but two of them survived. So there was a lot of this care going on in homes. This was not what we wanted. Of course, we wanted people to come forward and get proper care and make sure the families had proper protection, but many of this was going on with people working during periods of quarantine. And when people then fell ill and died, that was women that were preparing the dead as well. So we saw this impact on women, even survivors like this woman who never got sick herself, and should be studied in some study at some point, but really disproportionately women. This is another very fascinating thing we saw in Sierra Leone and Liberia, that with school closure, it was women that were taking on providing lessons for children. Nobody was regulating this. There was the idea that generally group gatherings were not supposed to be happening, but this was just a rudimentary school, and this older woman, who's probably my age, on the left side, was schooling this about 30 or 40 children kind of in a war-torn structure. So there was a lot of impact on women. Now, if this woman, I interviewed her to talk about the impact on her life. She herself was a school teacher. Because school was closed, she hadn't been paid. These families would pay her some small amount of money to school their children. So it was an informal economy that was going on that allowed her to support her family and allowed these children to not fall too far behind in their education. However, it was not a place that was that safe. There weren't hand-washing buckets, so one of the things we tried to do is at least help these informal structures through a large network of community health workers to do things more safely rather than try to shut these things down entirely. But for a lot of these women, that was their only income, and without that, they wouldn't have been able to provide for themselves and their families. And then we already mentioned health professionals at risk. This is just a kind of a classic picture of a nurse in the corner taking care of a sick person. This is after Ebola in a health center in Plebo, Liberia, that we helped to revitalize, rebuild after the terrible epidemic had ended there. But interestingly, in the Plebo Health Center, which provides care for 60,000 people in rural Liberia. When we first got to that health center, there was only one medicine in the depot, and that was ORS, which, I mean, we could argue is not really even a medicine. So how staff, there were no gloves, there was no running water, so how staff could possibly provide care for people in that setting, and the infrastructure is crumbling, et cetera. But many nurses continue to go to work, which is quite shocking. And even, you know, many health centers were shuttered. This one was not shuttered, the Plipo Health Center. So we used that opportunity, post Ebola, to help open a new health center, better facility with proper beds, et cetera. But as you can see, it's often the nurses that do a lot of care. This is part of our staff that Bree might remember from Mufuriki Health Center. All Sierra Leonean Ministry of Health staff, Partners in Health, chose to work with the government in an existing Ebola treatment unit. It was a retrofitted technical school. Rather than build our own unit, it was not ideal, but building a unit would have taken us 2 to 3 months, and we thought the burden of disease was too high, and that our Sierra Leonean colleagues were sitting ducks without us helping them. They had not enough equipment, they didn't have the proper infection control, so we put our shoulders together and tried to at least clean up and make it safer to work in Mufuriki, where some people here in this room actually worked. Just wanted to highlight what Dr. Johnson said, because I think this is so important. Maternal mortality in these countries is among the highest in the world. So it's almost 1,000 women per 100,000 that die in childbirth, and that's before Ebola. So we have an article that I'm happy to send to people that was published in the Tufts International Review, just about, you know, a patient story of a woman trying to get emergency obstetrical care in the height of the Ebola epidemic in Port Loko, one of these places that Dr. Johnson worked, and there was no place to go. The primary care clinic was closed. The nurses, as this woman is bleeding, didn't want to touch her. She met case definition for Ebola. There was nowhere to get a test for Ebola. And the woman died of obstructed labor. And she did not have Ebola. And that is happening over and over again in these countries without Ebola, made worse by the overlap in case definition. So this has exacerbated, and there was a recent World Bank study that, or set of estimates that came out in Lancet Global Health today, a publication saying they anticipate that maternal mortality will potentially even increase 100% in Liberia. And somewhat less in Sierra Leone and Guinea. This is because of Ebola, but because of Ebola sitting on top of an extremely weak health system that was inadequate in its ability to provide care. So I think there are at least three impacts on women in the short term around childbirth. So besides the biosocial impact, short term, of course, during the peak of the Ebola epidemic, attended birth was nearly impossible. Because of that overlap and the lack of clarity that Dr. Johnson was referring to, there was no place for women to go if they were just having sort of a routine pregnancy, and certainly not if they were having emergency. And so that was that. Medium term, we know there's been a marked decrease in family planning uptake. These are countries that already have extremely high fertility rates. And women suffered from very poor nutrition because of the economic shutdown in some of these communities. And then long-term, the estimates of the impact of health worker death alone, the numbers of health workers that died, will increase maternal mortality more than 100% in Liberia, and it was about 40% and 30% in Guinea and Sierra Leone, respectively. So these are things we need to pay attention to. If we can use the lens of Ebola to generate goodwill toward maternal survival, let's do that. But frankly, these are women who were extremely vulnerable to begin with and deserve our attention to build the proper health systems that will really provide them good care. This is Fanta, who I introduced you to in the last slide. She's been a community health worker at Well Body Alliance for about 8 years. She's a trusted person. So it's not like bringing in new people. She was an HIV community health worker. She helped a lot of people with TB. She can then also be trained to look for symptoms of Ebola. It's not like a whole new cadre of people. And paid long-term community health workers, in our opinion at Partners in Health, are a vital cornerstone to the provision of long-term care for people. And they're compensated. And they're connected to a system. They're not just running around with backpacks saying, okay, we're going to do this one thing, but if you need a C-section, you're out of luck. No, they're connected to the whole health system as part of the continuum of care. Fanta herself took care of many women like the women I showed you, and educated people and also alerted us to things like that school I was talking about, that informal school. Not as a policing, but saying, how can we help this group of women and children that are together and perhaps could be at risk? So having those eyes and ears and a trusted person, and we believe, and you know, my colleague Dan Kelly has written a nice short piece in the New England Journal about how really those community helpers are a cornerstone in turning the tide in the epidemic. The other thing that Partners in Health did is really employ a huge number of survivors. We have more than 675 survivors on our payroll in Sierra Leone. And these survivors are critical for many reasons as community health workers, but also as nurses, as drivers, as school teachers, because they've lived that experience and they could be spokespeople. So we saw early on when there was so much fear of coming forward that survivors could really lend a hand in that. They had some level of immunity, although we never relied on that and made sure they were properly protected. But they also had suffered the impoverishment of the illness. This is very important to remember because we felt that there should be a very important job creation strategy for people who survived, because many of them, their houses were burned down as part of quarantine. They faced a lot of stigma in the workplace, and so we wanted to help get them back on their feet. And then lastly, we now know more and more that there are long-term medical needs that survivors have, and this way we have them all enumerated in care as part of our network. And so they've been a really important force in extending ongoing care to the community level and really being a link to systems. And so with respect to time, I'll stay there so we have time for the discussion, but I want to thank you, and this is really on behalf of an amazing transnational team of Americans and Liberians, Sierra Leoneans, and many other Africans who lended their hands into the fight against Ebola. Thanks.